Okay, so welcome Zadie, Judd, and Gloria. And up looks like Toby just logged on. Yeah, there she is. And looks like Marina just logged on as well. So welcome Toby and welcome Marina. Just a heads up on not this week. Let me look at my calendar really quickly. Not this week, not next week, but the following week. So in 2 weeks from now, instead of this year being on Thursday, November 10th, we will have it a day earlier on Wednesday the 9th. Have a wedding, as my grandfather is probably aware of. His granddaughter, my cousin, is getting married that night. So we won't be holding shir that night, but we'll have it a day earlier.
Mazel tov.
Thank you. All right, Zadie, they wish you mazel
Thank you. And mazel tov to you, cousin.
Indeed. Also, that night happens to be Kristallnacht. Rabbi Cohen is away, so he charged me with helping do PR for the community-wide Federation Kristallnacht Awareness. So basically what the Federation's asking is pretty straightforward, is that we just go to shul and learn and take a photo of it. So that shouldn't be such a tall order. I know many of us don't want to come out in the evening. It's difficult. If possible, I'll try to remind us, but on Wednesday, November 9th at 7 o'clock, if you're able to come in person for Gemara, please do let me know. If you want, I can even pick up refreshments if that makes it more palatable. So, okay, putting it on your radar. Anyway, we are up to Chaf Gimel Amud Beis. That's 23b at the Mishnah toward the top of the page. And what we are basically going to be spending the evening discussing are what kind of things require a minyan. Okay, so offhand, what kind of things need a minyan, guys?
Kaddish.
Very good. Kaddish, Judd said, Kaddish requires
Baruch
Baruch Hu. So these are examples
Mesuda.
of what we call Dvar Meshech and Hisha.
Mesuda.
Yeah.
Mitzvah Suda. No?
Sudas mitzvah. We're going to see there's a particular kind of sudas mitzvah called sudas avra, which is the first meal that someone gets after a funeral. So we're going to see in the Mishnah, it talks about a bracha that's made at that suda. So that is an example of a sudas mitzvah that requires 10 men. Okay, we'll think of any other examples?
How about Chris?
Okay, let's do one at a time. Just going up in order on my screen. Gloria, Toby, and Frida.
How about a bris?
A bris, interesting. A bris actually doesn't require a minyan. Interestingly enough, now you would think it's such a significant mitzvah, such a
No.
special time, but.
No, it has to be done. Has to be done whether there are 10 people there or not.
Yeah, I've been to a bris or two in someone's home, and there certainly wasn't a minyan present over there. But generally, Gloria, what you might be thinking is many times when there's a bris, it takes place right after Shacharis. So there's generally already a minyan present because they were there for davening. And then, it's always that question of if I don't know the families, so then I could slip out. If I sort of know the family and I'm already there for Shacharis, so I wouldn't have gone on my way to attend the bris, but now I'm there. It's too awkward for me to slip out. So that, but then I need to catch that. So that's what happens. Okay, Toby, you were giving us an example. What else needs a minyan?
Pidginibin?
Pinyin. So interestingly, that doesn't require one either, actually, similar to a bris. But it's hard to recall because how often does a pinyin event happen that we can really think about that?
But I mean, we skipped over the basic one, like basically a minyan to daven if you want to say a kedusha, right?
Good. So that's along the lines of what Judd was saying
Yeah, that
about,
was a cottage. Yeah.
right. So what we have is a broad category of what's called, you know what, if you need to write down key terms, write down this term. I'm going to probably use it a lot. It's called Dvarim Shepa Kedusha, which are special parts of prayer that have a heightened sanctity and could only be said with a minyan. So, it's even in the name, Kaddish, Kedusha. It's Baruch Hu. So Kriyas HaTorah also, by the way, requires that. Oh, is that what you're going to say, Judd? Very good.
To
Marina,
say
is that what you're going to
that
say also?
and the repetition of Shmoneh Esrei.
Very good. Chazaras HaShatz requires it because, after all, the whole purpose is because you have a minyan needs to be Yotze. Marina, were you going to say something?
I said that it was
Yeah. All right, you get credit as well for that one. Oh, by the way, what, Erwin?
Kiddush Levana.
Kiddush Levana, actually, so ideally, you are correct, Erwin. Ideally, it would be said with a minyan. We do have Kaddish at the end of Kiddush Levana, which requires it. But in theory, if one is on their own, I would say it's not me'akev. So Erwin brings up a good point. There's certain things that might be more preferable to do with a minyan. Here's another example. Megillah reading, right?
Yeah, I'm going to say that. Megillah reading.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. You said that, Phyllis? I'm sorry. I didn't hear.
I'm just going to say that.
All right. We acknowledge it. You get credit. So Megillah reading, we talked about how ideally many times it should be done with a minyan. But even if not, of course, b'di'eved, you could still be yotzei reading on your own. Okay, so excellent. Many of you thought of ideas that are mentioned in the Mishnah. And then there's a number of obscure examples that also come up in the Mishnah. So why don't we take a look? Here we go. Well, the first one's already an obscure example. Ein porsin al shema. So, okay, what does it mean to be porsin al shema? If you look in Rashi, what happens is minyan, it's a question if it has to be a minyan or even an individual. Minyan haba le beis hakneses. Just remember to mute ourselves. Thank you. Minyan haba le beis hakneses la'achar shekara tzibur es shema. So let's say a minyan gets the shul and the tzibur already said shema. So these people who are coming in late, you know, there was a contradiction between the time that was on the printed bulletin, the time that was on the website, and the time that was on the daily virtual. So some people came in at 5:50, some people came in at 6 o'clock, and it threw everything off. So what do we do? Omed echad v'omer kadosh ubarchu brach rishon shebekriya shma. Now we don't want to take up too much time. Tirchut tzibur is important to bear in mind, but we ask some people to stay in for another minute. That way, the people who came in late can say Kaddish, Baruch Hu, and the first bracha of Kriya Shema. Now, when I first read, I'm like, what's so special about the first bracha of Kriya Shema? So the first bracha of Kriya Shema in the morning has Kedusha in it. We say Kadosh, 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 Baruch Hu Hashem in Komo. So that requires a minyan as well. There's a question if you're supposed to read it on your own, if you're saying it not with a tzibur. So I think we're basically makel on that in the end. But here's another example offhand, you know, slichos, saying yud gimel midas harachim, Hashem Hashem kol rachim v'chadim. That requires a minyan as well. When we were saying slichos at 6:05 in the morning during Aseres Yemei Tshuva, so there'd be times that we didn't have a minyan at the beginning. So we would actually have to skip over the yud gimel midas harachim. But ironically, the Yud Gimel Midas Harachmim is one of the original core parts of Slichos. It is what Slichos is. So to skip over that and say the Piyutim is mixing up the Iker and the Tafel. Anyway, so that's being Porsin Al Shema. It comes up in naturally Maseches Brachos as well. Ve'ein Ovrin Lifnei HaTeva. So, and no one goes before the Teva. Now, the Teva here is not referring to the Teva in Parshas Noach that we're about to read about. It's talking about davening, what we call davening for the Yamud. That means saying something like Chazaras Hashatz, for instance, which Chazan's repetition requires 10. Ve'nosin es kapehen. Also, duchening birchas kohanim requires. Oh, I think I just woke up my door. Ve'nosin es kapehen, and we don't do duchening. Don't worry, mercy, we'll handle. Ve'ein korim b'torah, kriyas Torah also requires 10. Ve'ein maftir b'navi, likewise, we do not lay in haftorah without 10. Now, here's the thing. It's actually very helpful because if you are on a trip, let's say, and you don't have a minyan, well, you don't need to worry about bringing a Torah with you because you're only chayiv in kriyas Torah if there is a minyan present. If there's no minyan, there's no chiyuv of kriyas haTorah. So it's more that the existence of the minyan brings about the chiyuv of reading the Torah. I'm sure there's other ways to parse the lumdus, but that's the basic understanding. Ve'inosin mamad u'moshev. Okay, now we're going to talk about some things that apply to Hilchos Avelis, the laws of mourning. Ve'inosin mamad u'moshev. So what they would do is you look in Rashi. Rashi talks about the mamadot. So if you ever notice, hopefully we don't see it so frequently, but at a funeral, basically while the coffin is being brought to the graveside by the pallbearers, you'll notice, I'm sure Rabbi Cohen does it as well, if you've been with I know a number of you have been around that, so we do it, the stops, mamados. Now, the mamados were a little bit more fleshed out back then. It was actually moving, but they stopped, they sat, they got back up, and people like would say things as they at every stop. Now we do it in a more of a perfunctory fashion, while saying Yoshev Beseser, we stop, move again. So we might be familiar with this idea in its modern day manifestation. So that requires 10 as well, because what's it referring to? In posim yeshiva mamados moshe lemeis. Okay. So the next thing, by the way, vein omen birchas avelim. So what is the blessing of avelim? The blessing, like, is not, it's not talking about baruch dayan emes. You say baruch dayan emes, blessed be the true judge, without a minyan. So what is birchas avelim, the blessing of the mourners? So if we look, the Gemara will actually explain to us what it is, but I'll tell you, I'll spoil the surprise. Mm-hmm. It's when they have the Sudas Havra, when they have the initial meal, there's mm-hmm. a special bracha made then that for some reason we don't make today. You can look at the Mefarshim on that. Tanchume Avelim, and then there's something called Tanchume Avelim. So Tanchume Avelim is at the end of the funeral service when we form a shura, so we form rows. And then the mourners walk down and we say Hamaki Minachin. So that is also done in the presence of a minyan. Uberchas Chasanim. Now shifting from the more somber life cycle to the happy events, Sheva Brachos are only recited when there's a minyan. Ve'emizam the Mishem Pachos Me'asara. And when we have a mezumen, so you'll notice from your benchers that we only say Elokeinu, the Reich Elokeinu, when there is a minyan present. And the final halacha is something completely different, which has to do with erechim. When somebody wants to consecrate something to the temple and then wants to redeem it afterwards, you don't just have one guy come in and assess the worth, but Ukarkos, Tisha v'Kohen, you need 9 Yisraelim and 1 Kohen. And va'adam kayotzman. Likewise, when redeeming a human being, you also need 9 Yisraelim and 1 human and 1 kohen. But we'll see. The Gemara is going to ask, "What does it mean redeem a human being? Can you consecrate a human being to the base of Mikdash?" So the Gemara will address that question. Phyllis, you got a question? No. Okay. Oh, Henry, welcome back. I'm glad the time zones have finally worked out. All right, good to have you back on.
Yeah, next week I'll be on the whole time. This was the last.
Okay. Very exciting. Welcome back. So we are in Chaf Gimel on the base on 23.
Okay.
In the Gemara.
All right.
Okay. So now the Gemara is going to ask, Minahani Mili, where do we come up with this idea of 10 men? This seems very arbitrary. Where in the Torah to say you need 10 men for these things? So Amarech Yemar Abba, Amarav Yochanan, Damar Krab, Nikdash Ibisoch Bnei Yisrael. And I'll be sanctified amongst the sons of Israel. So that teaches us kol davar sheva kedusha lo yapachos me'asara. That anything that's our key term for tonight, a davar sheva kedusha, something that's a special sanctified matter, it requires at least 10 men. My mashma, where do you see in that pasuk that besoch b'nei Yisrael, amongst the Jewish people, means amongst 10 members of the B'nai Yisrael? So here's how we figure it out. Here's some hermeneutics to follow. So Tanirachia, Asya, so we're going to have a Gezerah Shava now, okay? So remember, Gezerah Shava means when you have the same word or root of a word that appears in two different places in the Torah, it creates a wormhole that connects their dinim, connects their laws together. So Asya Toch Toch, Ksiv Hacha V'nikdashi B'soch B'nai Yisrael, Uksiv Hasam, and it's written elsewhere, Hivdalu Mitoch Ha'eda. You should remove yourself from the congregation, which is referring to Korach, where God wanted to, you know, swallow up all those members of Korach and his people. So we see that the same word, Toch, is mentioned in the context of sanctifying God and in the context of Korach. Now, okay, Shkayach, where do I see Korach, the number 10? There's much more than 10. So now there's a second step over here. And how do we know? So now we have the word Ada. So for us, yeah, Ada, Ada. Now we're going to have another Gezeira Shava. So it's like a double wormhole here. Tesiv Hasam Ad Masayla Ada Hara Hazos. In the context of the spies, the Meraglim, it uses the term Ada, a congregation. What's a better word for Ada? Okay, whatever. Gather, like, that's like more like a kahila. Okay, whatever. This congregation or whatever you want to call them. So there, it's 10 also. There were 10, remember, because Yeshua and Kalev, they didn't actually sin. So there's only 10 spies that were sinners. So Malon Asar, Afkan Asar. So here's basically how it works. From the Meraglim, we have the word Ada there. We know there were 10 bad spies. And the same word Ada is used in the context of Korach. And then in the context of Korach, it used the word Toch, which is used in the context of sanctifying God. So we take the number 10, move it over to Korach, and then using another Gezeira Shava, move it over to the Pasuk about sanctifying God. So we determine from there that we only sanctify God with Devarim Sheva Kedusha when there is an Ada. How much is an Ada? Well, we see that just as ten Meraglim were sufficient to be an Ada for committing a treacherous sin, so Achas Kama Kama, 10 men will suffice in order to sanctify God as an Ada. So there you have it. That is the source for requiring 10 men for a minyan. If you anyone ever asked you, you can point to this Gemara right over here. All right? Any questions?
Wasn't there also dealing with Avram when he was talking about how many tzaddikim will be found and he stopped at 10? I thought that was one of the other explanations for 10.
Right, because in Sodom, he finally stops at 10.
Right. Yeah.
That doesn't, right. Unless it's Gemara not thinking of, I don't think that's the source for minyan, but certainly
Rashi may comment on that. I could be wrong, but I thought he did.
Who does?
Rashi.
Rashi does. Anyone have a chumash on them?
I'll take a look at
Henry. Henry's pulling out a chumash. I see. You'll take a look. Okay. I may be forgetting that the Rashi says there. This is the source for a minyan. All right. I gotta read you.
I always thought too.
What?
I always thought that too.
Yeah, I mean, when you read, you're like, oh, 10, a minyan. But from a halachic standpoint, I don't think that's the makor, unless it's another makor, because that would have just been like a much easier example to point to. Okay, so someone will tell me what Rashi on there says, if that's
indeed. No, the Rashi there, it talks about comparing it to the Dor HaMabul, that if you had Noach and his sons and his wife and so on were, I think, eight, and Hashem, he still didn't save the whole world for those eight. And then somehow Rashi gets to 9 and then 10, but he's comparing it to Noach, not with the minyan.
I'm sure you'll find someone, whether it's a Rishon or at least an Achron, who makes that observation as well. Sure. But from a halachic standpoint, very least, this is the source right here. Okay, so going further in the Gemara, the Ein Osin Mamad Umosha Pachos Me Asara. So we're talking about again the stops, the mamados at a funeral. Kevin Devoy LeMeimar Umvi Yukarim Amudu Shavu Yukarim Shavu Batzer Me Asara Lav Orach Ara. You ever hear this phrase? And I don't know a lot of Yiddish, but this is one I know. You know, something's pasnish. Means like, yeah, it's not appropriate. You know, like, come on. So basically, this is an interesting example. You see, we basically, what the Mishnah did was, it grouped all sorts of things together that require 10. But the thing is that some things formalistically, halachically, strictly require 10 for a minyan. You're not allowed to say Dvarim Sheva Kedusha without a minyan. And then there are things that got put in the same Mishnah, but really deserve to be in a different category, such as the Mamados. Why is it that the Mamados require 10? It's not so much that the Mamados require 10, it's that they say to them, rise, Yakarim, rise, and sit, Yakarim, sit. Yakarim is Yakar, precious ones. Or however they want to translate it in the art scroll. So what's it mean? And so why do you need 10? You need 10 to say Yikarim. Why? Look at Rashi. Rashi says, Lahatriach, Lavorch ar Lahatriach Shliach Tzibor. It's not the right thing to impose on the guy who's officiating. Lakach Lakros and Yikarim. Dimkein Mahanachna Lemeruben. Because if you use your nicest title for only a few people, what kind of special titles are you going to use when there's even more people around? It seems a little bit odd to me, but the point being is that you don't actually need a minyan to do the mamados. It's just that if you're going to be using start pulling out fancy titles, we're not going to start imposing. I have a minyan, like the 7 a.m. minyan. So there's like 11 and a half men over there. You know, we just make it by the skin of our teeth most times, right? For a minion like that, it's a smaller amount of people. So I don't need to like go out there and do all these fancy things like we now honor, who here's a 7 a.m. attendee. I don't know. We now honor, Mark Waxhall with doing this thing. Why? Because it's like a small minion. You don't need all the formalities. And in a 9 a.m. sanctuary, we do all the formalities because there's a big crowd that's there, right? Everyone's inside in attendance in the sanctuary. So a similar idea over here that when there's like a smaller crowd, it's, you're not going to start pulling out all the different pomp and circumstance. You're not going to start making a show out of it. Because if you do it for them, then what are you going to do when you get the bigger crowd? Okay. Because it's, it's an imposition on the guy officiating to have to do all those, to put on a whole show just for a few people. But if the 7 a.m. really desires it, I could come in and I could do all that stuff for you guys. Okay. All right, Toby, at 8 a.m. we'll do that? Yeah, I think you'll enjoy?
Okay. Oh, try it. Try it.
Don't try it.
All right. We just said that. So what are these blessings of the mourners, blessings of the chasanim? So blessings of the chasanim, of the grooms, we know what that is. That's called sheva brachos. But my birchas aveilim, what is this blessing of the aveilim? Birchas rechava. This is the blessing that they make out in the street, in the rechov. Damar Rabbi Yitzchak Amar Rabbi Yochanan, birchas aveilim ba'asara. When one recites the blessing on the aveilim, he requires 10. However, the aveilim themselves, the mourners themselves, are not included in the minyan. However, the chassan himself, the groom himself, could be included in the minyan for reciting sheva brachos. Now, what is this birchas aveilim, this blessing of the mourners? So take a look at Rashi. And Rashi actually tells us that it's two separate brachos. Rashi, dibur hamaskil, ein aveilim min haminyan. You look at Rashi, just slightly above where it is in the Gemara. Shrehu omer bracha l'nachman b'fnei atzman. One bracha is actually said for those who came to pay a shiva call. Achinu baal hagmul yishayim lechem gemulchem atov bracha tashem yishayim hagmul. So that's a kind of a blessing for the people who came, that God should give them reward for supporting the family in this difficult time. And then ulaveya b'fnei atzman, and a separate bracha is recited vis-a-vis the mourners, Achinu Baal Nechamot Sinachim Eschem Bruchat Hashem Enachim Aveilim, that God should give you consolation. Veino Kulan Yachad. So there's basically a necessity to group the Aveilim separately, and those who are coming to pay a Shiva Kol in one place, because they each have distinct brachos, therefore Aveilim are not included in the minyan that is required. All right. And then just finishing back to the Gemara, finishing up that piece. So the Birchas Chasanim, the groom is included in the Sheva Brachas. End of that piece. All right. Moving forward. The aim is Zamnin al Hamazon, B'Shem, Pachos Me'asara. So as we learned, that we only see the Varech Elokeinu when there is a minion. Why? We're going to see a concept come back again. Because if we are going to start invoking and saying Elokeinu, the name, and we're going to invoke the name of God, and just like a few people hanging around, it's not b'kavodik when you have a proper gathering and there's at least 10 that are gathered, so then it's respectable to invoke God's name. This might philosophically build off a similar principle, Berov HaMahadras Melech, that the more people gathered in general, the more glory that's given to God. The flip side of the coin is that when there's only a few people that show up, it can be a disgrace. I don't know if disgrace is the right word, but it's a little bit underwhelming. It's all, you know, it's more embarrassing. So it's lav orach ara, it's pasnish. You're not going to invoke God's name when there is not a minion present. Interesting halacha, by the way, because women actually can make a zimun. In fact, one might say that when there's not a zimun of men present, the women, and there's two men and three women. I've been at, you know, Merce and I, we've had a meal like that once or twice. So then the women actually should go ahead and make the zimun, and the men should answer in that case. However, let's say there's 10 women, they would not answer Lelokeinu because it requires an actual minyan. That's the general assumption. But it's interesting, because if you assume Lelokeinu is a Dvarim Sheba Kedusha, it should require 10 men. But if it's just a matter of being at Lav Orach Ara, which the Gemara seems to be saying, that is just you need at least 10, you need a critical mass, so it's respectable to say it. One might argue, why can't 10 women say Lelokeinu then, if 10 women are present? So that requires further analysis. Okay, moving forward. So as we learned, one can consecrate things and donate them to the temple. The thing is, if the temple wants to now sell it for proceeds or he wants to redeem it, so then we have to assess the worth. So where do we get this? Where do we get this idea that there needs to be 9 Yisraelim and then at least one, or there has to be one Kohen that's part of this cohort of people who are assessing it? Amar Shmuel, Asar Kohanim, Ksuvim Beparsha. So we're going to learn a very important hermeneutical principle from the good old Rabbi Yishmael's, right? So Rabbi Yishmael isn't just in davening, so we can add in a Kaddish to Rabbanan, but it's there also to teach us important principles on how to interpret our Torah. So Asara Kohanim Ksuvim Beparsha. In this general topic in the Torah, the word Kohen is mentioned 10 times. Chad Legufei, it's mentioned once to tell us that at least one of those 10 men needs to be a Kohen. Ve'irach ha'vimir acher miyat, ve'mir acher miyat ele rabos tish Yisraelim v'chad Kohen. So the principle of miyat acher miyat, an exclusion after an exclusion. So when the Torah tells us we need a Kohen, that's exclusive language. A Kohen to the exclusion of a Levi or a Yisrael. So the thing is, once you have a Miyat Acher Miyat, you have an exclusion after an exclusion, for some reason, this is our tradition, that if an exclusion follows an exclusion, the second exclusion is actually not supposed to be interpreted as an exclusion, but rather it's supposed to be inclusive. What does that mean? So it means the second time Kohen is mentioned, it's actually to include Yisrael instead, counterintuitively. And then every subsequent time Kohen is mentioned, it's also to include Yisrael. So the first time it says Kohen, it's actually just to tell us a Kohen. And then the next 9 times, it's a miyat acher miyat, an exclusion after exclusion, which means actually don't be exclusive, right? That's the trend these days. Be inclusive and have 9 Yisraelim instead of additional 9 Kohanim. However, the Gemara asks, "Ema chamisha kohanim v'chamisha Yisraelim." However, we may ask, if we follow the sequence of miyat achar miyat, the third time Kohen is mentioned would actually restart the cycle. So the third time Kohen is mentioned, it should actually be inclusive language. And then the fourth time, it's exclusive again, and then miyat achar, and then you do the whole miyat achar miyat all over again. So it should really come out to be 5 Kohanim and 5 Yisraelim. To which the Gemara responds, Taka, it's a kashim. I don't know. It's difficult. So actually, there's something important about the language, about kasha, that I wanted to point out. I saw on the Heliga Masifta footnotes, which I'll share with you. I don't know if they put it in the art scroll ones, about the language of kasha. There it is.
No.
Yes.
Not
here.
Not here.
What was that?
It's not okay, in this commentary.
I'll tell you what the Heliga Masifta footnote says, which seems to be based off the Rashbam in Bava Basra. B'chol makom shamur b'gemara kasha lo batu dvar shal mishe hikshu alav el shav osa shalom atzu teretz kushu zu. Sometimes the Gemara will end off with the language of tiyufta. Tiyufta means, you're right, I don't have a good answer to this question, therefore, ignore my assertion, everything falls apart. Kasha means that we are not repudiating, we're not rejecting the assertion of the Gemara, we're just saying that we have a tradition for this, we don't currently have a good explanation, a good elucidation of the tradition, so we're going to leave it as a kasha for the time being, but the matter is, it's not case closed. So someone will hopefully come one day and explain it, but that's different from the language you'll often see in the Gemara, which ends off with the language of tiyufta. Whereas tiyufta, that means case closed. We don't have a good answer. Forget everything we just said. Kasha means we still accept this despite the difficulty that was presented. So anyway, just important to know that obviously the Torah is on a higher madriga, but even in Talmudic parlance, we have to be careful to read and understand the distinction between synonyms, that two words that may translate the same can actually convey two different things. So that's why I'm always, got to throw out those key terms.
How does teiku integrate in that logic?
Interesting. So teiku is we don't actually know either way. So unlike tiyufta, which is we reject it, kasha is we accept it, we don't know the reason. Teiku is we actually don't know either way. So we just, if there's money and we don't know if it belongs to Reuven or Shimon and we end up saying teiku, we based and holds on to that money until Eliyahu HaNavi comes and paskins. So that would be what a teiku is. So yeah, thank you for bringing that in, Joe, because that's also an ending we'll see sometimes in the Gemara. Did I answer it? Or?
No, that's fine.
Okay. Final part is Gemara. Va'adam kayotzi behen. So, other mikdash, can I consecrate someone to the Beis HaMikdash? Interestingly, you actually see with in Sefer Shmuel, Chana actually consecrates her son Shmuel to the temple service. But what we mean is you can't just donate a human being to the Beis HaMikdash. Arevav Omer Demayalai. So a guy says, whatever my financial worth is, then I'm going to pay that much to the Beis HaMikdash. The Tanya Homer Dmei Elisha Shamin Oso Keeved VeEved Iskish Karkos Tziv Mistachal Demasov VeNechem Achreichem LeRishis Achuza. So someone who wants to donate himself, not literally himself, but his worth to the Beis HaMikdash, how do we determine a person's worth? So we're not like this is like some deep like we're gonna look into your soul and see it. It basically means that we're taking to the slave market. We'd see how much someone would pay for you. We see how much your stocks are. So. How much would someone pay for a slave in a slave market? So, we have to adjust for inflation. We have to figure out if the feds are rising interest rates. Okay, so that's how we basically figure that out. And now where do we get this from? How do we know that we have to assess him with 9 men who are Yisraelim and 1 that's a Kohen? So we have a Hekish that connects the topic of Avadim, of servants, with the topic of land ownership. Same way you need 9 Israelim plus 1 Kohen for assessing land, you need 9 Israelim and 1 Kohen for assessing human worth as well. And that brings us to the end of this Gemara. You know what? I have one piece from Chashuk Eichem I want to share, but why don't we just quickly learn the next Mishnah and get onto the top of Chaf Dalam and Aleph, and then I'll share an idea from Rav Zilberstein, and then we'll call it a night. Okay? Sound like a good plan? All right. Next Mishnah, Hakori B'Torah L'Yivchos B'Shosh Psukim. This is a halacha that we've familiarized ourselves with in previous Shirim, that an aliyah in the Torah cannot be less than 3 Psukim. That's the minimum. V'Yikrel Meturgaman Yosem Yipasuk Echad U'Banavi Shlosha. When reading from the Torah, so they would have a Meturgaman back then, as we've learned, a guy who basically, after they didn't have the art scroll stone Chumash, which actually, on the one hand, it makes life easier because you don't need to always announce all the pages, but it means that no one knew what the guy was reading. So instead of 2 seconds to announce the page, they had a guy who would translate it pasuk by pasuk, which took much longer, as we've seen in the past. So for the Torah, because the Torah is the word of God, it requires extra precision. Therefore, after every pasuk, the guy needs to translate it. Ubanavi Shlosha. However, when reading the Haftorah and Navi, it's okay if you go three psukim and then pause for the guy to summarize and translate the previous three psukim, because Navi doesn't need as much precision as the Torah does. Now let's say the next three psukim are each separate ideas. You'll see that like in Parshas Ki Tsetse. You'll have like many times, you know, in succession, each pasuk is its own separate mitzvah. So then, I mean, this is talking about in the context of Nevuah though. So then you would have to actually read one, translate. Finally, so final idea, you'll see this many times with Haftorahs. We want to end off, let's say, on a happier note. So we'll take a Haftorah, we'll take something else later on in the Navi, and we'll append it to the end of the Haftorah, so we end off in higher spirits. So that can be done, but the question is, how far can you skip? Because back then, again, you'll see today, Judd, as you pointed out in the past, that people will have scrolls of Sifrei Nevuah for the purpose of the Haftorah. Back then, they didn't have that nice red book with the huge text with the Haftorah in there. Everything was on scrolls back then. So you could have just put a bookmark and you didn't have like a page that actually takes the psuk and then puts it in there, and the art scroll book, which puts it all in order for you. So back then, if you wanted to append extra psukim to the Haftorah that were not part of it, you would need to actually roll the scroll to those psukim. So the question is, how much can you skip? You could only skip as long as the guy is still translating. If the translator, right, so translator needs to translate three psukim. If all it does is takes you within that time to roll to append additional psukim, you may do that. However, if it takes longer to roll it than that, you're not allowed to append those psukim. Why? Take a look at Rashi. At the end of Rashi, Dibur Masko Shel Yisukat Torgamon, Zemishum, Shein Kavod Sibur Lamo Shem Bishtika. Because it is an affront to the dignity of the congregation to just stand there twiddling their thumbs in silence while you are rolling the Torah.
So many times, the ultimate challenge is the Haftorah of Shabbos Shuvah. It's Hosea, Yoel, and Micha. And
if you're, separate,
if you're doing it out of a cloth, you have to roll very quickly to go from one to the other.
Yeah, exactly. That's an excellent point, Henry. So, you know, what we try to do sometimes, by the way, is sometimes I'll come into, it's happened before, more rarely at the 8 a.m., but I've had this at the 7 a.m. I've walked in to give the sermon, and they realize that the Maftar Torah, let's say, wasn't rolled beforehand, so then I'll actually give the sermon while they're rolling the Torah. So that way, we don't expend more time in the process. All right, that's the end of the Gemara for tonight. I want to raise a interesting halakha question that comes up from Rav Zilberstein. Rav Zilberstein asks, there's a guy, the title is Ha'im Levater Al Tefillah B'Tzirik Bein Lo LaHasim Tosevus Meskores. So here's the case. There's a guy who, he's a worker, and basically he davens minyan every morning, very erlich guy, but his boss is now offering that anyone who comes in an hour earlier to work will get an extra bonus. He'll make a lot of money for coming in for that hour earlier. So he's trying to figure out, can I daven b'yechidus? Can I daven on my own in order so that I'm able to make this money? So if you take a look in the Mishnah Brura says, v'mu'onis mamon, so when is one allowed to skip davening with a minyan? This is referring to men who are working, because women do not have an obligation to daven with a minyan, though of course they're more than welcome to. So when is a man allowed to skip minyan? If by davening with a minyan, he's going to lose his salary. If he needs to get to some appointment in the city by 8 a.m. in the morning, and even davening at 6:30, he doesn't think he'll make it. So he's allowed to skip minyan that day and daven b'yechidus. However, there's a difference between losing money, having something deducted from your salary, versus minyas harevach, which is I have the opportunity to make additional money. I have the opportunity to close the deal, which is Not that I'm not losing money. I just lost the opportunity to gain money that I don't currently own. To that, the Mishnah Berurah says that one actually should prioritize minyan over losing potential money as opposed to losing money that he's currently supposed to make. However, Rav Zilberstein points out, however, if someone is kind of mocking and he comes in early every day and just like one day it's not going to work with minyan, that might not be considered a case of losing something that you might, a potential money, that might be considered losing actual money. So if you, let's say you need to come in early every single morning in order to get that bonus. And then one day coming in early conflicts with minyan times, it's Rosh Chodesh, whatever it is. So then you are actually owed that money and you could come in, you could miss minyan that day, because at that point, since that's money that's owed to you, as long as you can make that final day, so that's considered a real hefsin, a real loss. So, okay, that's an interesting case that comes up, but we're talking about the significance of minyan. It's an idea that sometimes, I know I'm preaching to the choir, we have a lot of people who come to minyan here, but it's interesting. It's kind of like something that's lost sometimes. I've talked with other rabbis who are, you know, of the modern Orthodox ilk, and we were debating whether minyan is a chiyuv or not. Rav Moshe Feinstein writes explicitly, it's a chiyuv midrabbanan. So I don't, there's a lot of things that are chiyuv derabbanan that we keep. So it seems to be, there's minority shita that you don't need, that minyan is a reshus. However, it seems the majority of posts seem to think it's a chiyuv. So it's a tzarech iyan. It's a tzarech iyan sometimes. I never understand how like 8:30 a.m. on a Sunday morning, how like there aren't more men over there. You know, like you can only have excuses for so long. Anyway, I'm preaching to the choir. I should stop. Okay, guys. Wishing you a wonderful evening, a good Shabbos to all, and God willing, see you soon.
Great, thank you.
Thank you.
Good Shabbos.
Thank you. Good Shabbos.
Good Shabbos.